Arahoe Radio.
The Internet's only rock and roll paranormal extravaganza.
Special guest with us, Robbie Thomas, psychic medium.
Where is the Lawrence House?
It's in Ontario, Canada. It is a house that was owned by a shipbuilder. And it was haunted. The tools of the trade back then were baby powder. The reason being is I could see, and the kids with me couldn't, so I figured if I threw the baby powder in the air as the spirit was walking through, it would cover it, and then they could say, oh, we see it now. The next tool was a flashlight, so we know where we're going, and a rope, so we could tie it around so we don't get taken away by the spirit. So that
hey,
was
Anthony, isn't that what your last girlfriend said?
That's just a Friday night for Anthony. Baby powder, a rope, and a flashlight.
Para Hub Radio, Thursdays 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern, on Bounce Radio and parahub.org.
Is the veil between this world and the next getting thinner? I'm Chris Sloan, inviting you to join in and listen to a new podcast that deals with the paranormal, Parapod, with new guests every week, from paranormal investigators to the people they help. Hear actual EVP. The people that capture.
We go into a case to disprove a haunting. Three flashlights, actually four counting the lantern, were actually honed in on this thing, and it was swallowing the light up.
Parapod. Log on to myspace.com/ Chris Sloan Radio. That's myspace.com/ CHRISSLONE Radio. The only difference between the believer and the skeptic is time. And your time is now.
Over the floor, you start to swallow and begin to revive.
dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Then you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 750 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated for more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day, www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
Truth in Paranormal Science, TIP, is a group of individuals who are searching for discussion about the paranormal, whether they be believer, skeptic, or skeptical believer. Their goal is to find out as much truth as they can about the paranormal, from the dogma to the devices used. The website is, it's paranormal-tips.com. That's paranormal-tips.com.
Yeah.
And while Scott is struggling with knobs,
I totally just blew that.
He's not really sure what to pull out.
Right. Oh, this will be an interesting hour.
So much for that intellectual discussion we were going to have here for the next hour. Great.
You should know that. I'm sitting here.
Go ahead.
We would like to welcome Kevin Knight and Paul Sherman to Ghostly Talk. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, guys.
Hello, how are you doing? Thank you.
Really good to have you guys here.
This is actually pretty topical because one of the things that we noticed over the past few years is that a lot of people are running around doing ghost hunting and experimenting in the paranormal and things like that. And, of course, then you have your people who attach the word demonologist to their they give themselves the title of demonologist. They say, oh, that's dangerous. Dangerous, you're going to run into something, and then you're going to need me. And then...
My favorite will always be president, because everybody wants to be the president of something.
Oh, the president of a ghost hunting group. So we've got all this stuff going on.
I think the main qualification for being a demonologist is having played Dungeons & Dragons. And you have the monster manual with you, and so you know what you're looking at.
I have met some of these folks, but and I think you might be right, but no. So we've got that going on. We've got, of course, all the television stuff going on. We've got people coming out with new devices all the time. Well, now all the time, and while I applaud the engineering there's the underlying scientific principles that sometimes are overlooked, and it's difficult to express. My simultaneous joy and elation with the
somebody out there trying
the amount of the amount of activity that's going on and the amount of thinking that's going on, with my incredible dismay at how there's such a lack of progress.
Well, there's really no new devices. I mean, the people will take an old device, put a new case on it and a few more lights, and make it go bing, and they'll call it a new ghost hunting device. I think for anybody who's listening to this show, they probably have seen a few of the ghost hunting shows, and the advent of this K2 meter. And hearing the explanations, the scientific explanations. Well, it's a device that does something different, and it finds ghosts. That's not really an explanation. It's basically just an EMF detector without all the, stuff on it.
It basically
takes an EMF, perfectly good EMF meter, and makes it useless for doing electrical work.
Well, one thing that I want to say while I've got you guys on is all of those devices, from the innocuous thermometer to and probably the more
you're
accurate
about the throwback thermometer, the one you point at a wall.
Any
laser.
Of them? Okay. Any of them? Right. I don't care if it's an actual thermometer with mercury in it, or
I'm finding one of those now.
Even a compass.
Non-contact thermometer.
Yeah. Ooh. Or even a compass. I mean, to a K2 meter or Frank's box or anything like that. All of these devices are the theory is. Right, as far as I understand it, the theory is that if a ghost is in the area and wants to communicate or whatever, that it can manipulate certain things, and then we can detect these certain things that it's manipulating, and they're anomalous to the area.
Yeah.
Then we can say that there's maybe a possibility that there's a ghost trying to contact us. So the theory is you're not ever going to directly measure a ghost. You're going to measure an effect.
Not with the technology that we have, and you really can't even call it a ghost, really.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, the word ghost comes with a whole lot of baggage and a whole lot of assumptions. Well, a ghost is a dead person, and you know they have something to do before they move on, and you know that sounds really good, but it's also just a total guess. We don't know what's actually going on, or if indeed anything is going on. Just because of the way the science, if I can use that term loosely, is done.
Uh-huh.
But my opinion.
Well, I think the term scientific also, and I'm going to be blunt here, and I'll cite it with an example, which I always love to do, and Doug's going to roll his eyes through the back of his head when I say this, but I was bed shopping a few months ago, right? And I went to the bed place, right? And, of course, I got accosted by, here comes the vultures coming after me, right? Trying to sell me a bed, and the lady's like, can I help you? I'm like, I'm looking for a bed. And she's like, well, come over here, and I'll have you lay on our scientific mattress, and you'll lay on the mattress. I'm like, okay, so I'm like, well, this is a really interesting device you have here. You lay on this thing, and it'll tell you what kind of mattress I need. So how does this thing work? And the lady looks at me, straight face, guys, and says, well, it's scientific, sir. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's great, but, why, what's scientific, is there an algorithm that measures my fat on my back and tells me what, what I need exactly? You fat lard, you need a big, huge bed because you're gigantic, you loser, or whatever. I mean, is there something, there's mathematics, is the mysteries of the universe being unleashed in this mattress in front of us here to give me the proper mattress that I need?
And well, you're like, not going to get the answer from a mattress salesman.
No, she's like, it's science, she responded with,
she's
it's
not
science.
The inventor of the bed.
Well, my point about that, though, is I see this being the word scientific being thrown around like a candy word for people because, well, look, we're a scientifically based ghost hunting association. This is what we do here. We're scientifically based. And I think some people, they don't even know what the word really means.
Paul has actually designed actual scientific experiments with regards to ghost hunting. He did a really good experiment with some groups in his area regarding suggestibility and how much that plays in defining, quote, evidence.
Well, let's talk about this. Yeah, let's. I didn't mean to slam on you, hit you there, Kevin. But let's talk about this experiment that you're talking that in regards to Paul did. Let's hear about this. Let's get into it.
Yeah, what'd you do? Yeah, tell him, Paul.
What it was is I got tired of people saying that telling people about a haunted location doesn't influence what's going on and that you have to tell them in order to be able to debunk things. Well, when you're investigating, you shouldn't be going in biased one way or the other where you're going to go in and I'm going to debunk things or you go in and go, I'm going to prove things. You should be going in neutral. And in order to find out a root cause, you don't want any preconceived ideas about the place.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people argued with me on that one, so I thought, I'm going to set up an experiment. So I got a house. A friend of mine had a house. His grandparents had lived in it. His grandparents had built it. No reports of any hauntings or anybody dying in the area, just to make sure that later on, if anybody said anything, I could go, there are no reported hauntings in this area. It's kind of a creepy place. His grandfather hadn't lived in the place for about 6 years. It's just kind of sitting. It's actually about 8 years now. It's been sitting empty. So, looking at the place, you kind of get a little bit of influence from it.
Okay.
And what I had done is I had two teams of three I was going to take to this location. The first team, I told them, we're just there to see what we see. We don't know what's going on. Somebody just wanted us to go in and look, and we're just going to go in and see if we observe anything. Well, I took them in. We observed nothing.
Let's stress this, though. Now, what you did initially with this group of people you took in there and said, it's just a regular old house, right? It's just a
I just said, this person has no idea what's going on with this place.
Okay.
We're to go in and see if we see any activity and report back
to
them.
Okay, all right.
So the first team went in, nothing. The second team I took in, and when I took them in, I was telling them about, a lot of the teenagers here talk about this little girl in a blue dress that's been seen running around. And from what I can tell from local stories is that the little girl died during a storm outside. A tree branch had fallen on her, and she used to always play out in the front yard. And then there was another story that went along in there with the guy here, her father, who kind of lost it after that because the mother died, and he would chase a lot of the kids off with a shotgun, and he's been seen moving around upstairs from time to time when these kids go out on dares and, your typical teenager, let's get a thrill and go off into this spooky haunted house.
Mm-hmm. So an elaborate backstory.
Pardon?
An elaborate backstory.
Yes. Well, it's believable,
so,
and we've heard similar
so that,
things.
So that, it was like your typical local legend.
Right.
Took them in. We wandered around the place for a while. We set up a few cameras, went upstairs, checked some things out. Nothing was really going on. Nobody was really seeing anything or anything like that. But when we were coming down the stairs, one of the investigator right in front of me had a blue LED light. He was wearing a white T-shirt, and he went to check the time real quick to see what time it was. Well, when he did that, it lit up his white shirt, and the two guys that were already down the stairs and around the corner a little bit, off this banister, could see the reflection in a piece of glass outside. Immediately, they went, "Did you see that?" And they went and they were talking about it real quick, and within seconds, one of them swears that he saw a little girl running around outside with blonde hair.
Okay.
And that's not what it was.
No.
But that just shows you right there, they took that one little incident that wasn't even had anything to do with a little girl or anything like that. It was just a pure fluke.
Mm-hmm.
And they automatically made it fit the story.
Mm-hmm.
From then on out, we went outside. They kept seeing shadows and stuff in the window, and I couldn't figure out what they were looking at. They kept swearing they saw a shadow person moving around upstairs. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I finally noticed that the clouds were low that night, and they kept varying in density. Well, the difference in light in the clouds as they rolled across the sky was making it look like things were moving upstairs, because you'd get dark and it'd get light, and it looked, you can kind of say that might look like a shadow.
Mm.
Well, they automatically took that part of the story and made it fit what they were kind of seeing.
Mm.
So, and from there on out, we went back inside, and they were hearing footsteps and stuff, and no, what it was is we had heard this with the first group, too, but we figured out what it was. It's just the house settling, and as it settles certain ways, you hear the noise and it gets quieter a little bit, but it's in the same exact location. We tracked down about where it was coming from,
mm-hmm.
but it was varying in intensity.
Yeah, which
so
I
we
think,
went back in.
What was that, Kevin?
Sorry, I was saying. This is actually a pretty well designed experiment, and I'd actually like to see it, carried out several more times because one experiment with two teams is suggestive, but, at best, it would be
exactly.
An anecdote.
Exactly. One data point does not constitute evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But it does show you that it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
with the second team, everything that they went through and that they reported on was twisted to fit the story that they were fed before they went in.
Well, yeah, and that's perception right there. I mean, that's how stories get passed on from generation to generation. We've heard that before. But, and that's one thing I've noticed also. And, Doug, we've done this before. We've gone to a place, we've heard a story, right? We've been to a place. Bonnie, you've been to places also.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little girl that roams this house. And I've seen some, from as objective a mind as I have, I've seen some kind of weird things over the years. But, it's few and far between, mind you, and what we have done is we've went to some places, we've done our research to try to find things. Well, it's the same setup. We've heard the stories. But I know some of the stuff, for example, one place we went to, we experienced something rather interesting, and then we went afterwards. We didn't really know much of the backstory of the place. We went to the library and read on it afterwards. But I still see this whole we've been, like I said, we've been talking about this, telling this scenario for years, though, on this show, that if you want to see ghosts, I'll show you ghosts. It's very simple.
Right, you
and
just plant the story.
You pretty much set this up in a lab environment, Paul, what we've been talking about. You know, you set people up. You the suggestibility aspect of this, like, there's a story here, this person was murdered in this place, this is, but the little girl, little guy, whatever.
Right, and but the thing is, a lot of parapsychologists, too, there's been a lot of research into parapsychology.
Yeah, yeah.
They could add to that, and they probably would add to that, and say that it's a cute little experiment. What happens is, the people there create the haunting. And they do it through PK or whatever abilities that you already have. So a lot like the...
I actually have two questions.
Okay.
Based on some of the terminology that's being tossed around.
Okay.
First of all, how do you define a parapsychologist? What does one have to do in order to earn the title of parapsychologist? And the second question is, do you guys consider what constitutes proof when you're talking about proving paranormal creatures and events?
Well, that's interesting because, first of all, let me take the parapsychology thing first. The parapsychology thing is, I'm only talking about actual parapsychologists that we've talked to on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've talked to two of them, well, probably a handful of them, but only two of them that I actually believed. And I still don't agree with them on everything.
Yeah.
I don't agree with them that ghosts exist only in our, ghosts do exist, but only in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, we are the ones exhibiting.
We're the catalyst for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, were these guys like psychologists that like dabbled in the paranormal?
No.
Or were they?
No, these were people who studied parapsychology.
Yeah.
And are on boards and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure we could look them up and look up all their credentials and things like that. But
these are just ideas that have been thrown our way, you know.
However, I learned from them,
yeah.
You know, and I enjoyed talking to them, but I enjoy learning from them. But
and that's just a different viewpoint on the.
From them.
I think that the point is that just a different viewpoint on the experiment that Paul did. Is that's what they would say?
Yeah, they would say that it was created by the human.
Now, when it comes down to proof,
I mean, it's just similar to that. What's the experiment that they did at University of Toronto?
Where they invented a ghost.
I know the one you're talking about. I've read up on that one.
Yeah, they invented a ghost.
I forget the name they gave him, but yeah, they basically invented a ghost, and it supposedly materialized the PK.
Right, but they all knew. They knew. They sat and invented him together. I mean, they were sitting around a table, and they go, well, what should we call him? What should he do? He should have had a tryst with, the woman of a house down the road and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they really invented this elaborate backstory, and they all did it together. They invented it together.
Wasn't that an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Well, I think this preceded Buffy.
Now, yeah. Kevin, you asked a question about proof. Now, I'm sorry, phrase that again. Go ahead.
What constitutes proof when talking about paranormal creatures and an event? And this is one of the things that I bring up constantly, is that if you look at like a ghost investigator show, you know, they'll see a spike on their EMF reader, mm-hmm. and they'll say, oh, well, there's a ghost here.
Well, yeah.
And some of them, some of them will go through the charade of pretending to debunk it. It's like, nope, can't find a source.
Yeah, well,
be a ghost.
No.
So what do you consider? What would you consider proof?
Well, somebody said that we were going to get grilled.
No, this is good. This is good. No, I'm actually enjoying this. Thank you,
but
Kevin.
I'm
great to have somebody hit us up.
For me, I don't need
a scratchy EVP is not proof. I don't care whose show it is on. And believe me, guys, we've seen and heard them all. As far as EVPs are concerned. And 99% of the ones that I've heard, you know, I'm like, that's interesting. That's all I say about it. Because I don't believe that, you know, it may be, but it doesn't constitute proof, okay? Now, what I will, I always point to these because we've been milking them for 5 years now, okay? After the show, guys, what I can do is point you to a couple of EVPs that we got a number of years ago. And
I'll have some, too, that you might
want
to listen
to. I want you guys to hear them. I want you guys to tell us what you think. Now, that aside, a scratchy EVP or a blurb in a film, I've seen a million of those, too, that does not constitute proof. I'll tell you what constitutes proof for me is if I experience it myself. period. Right. If I felt something, I've heard something, and even then, that's just me against the
world.
And
that's the same thing with the EVPs. I mean, you just have to be there when these EVPs were captured.
Yeah.
So, you're the first to say it's your perception of what actually happened. You're not calling it a ghost or a demon or a spaceman.
No, no, I'm not at all. And I think it's about experience. I mean, this goes back to what we've talked about for a while.
Well,
it goes back to experience. I'm not taking it to the Inquirer, first of all. I'm not trying to film a pilot off of it, second of all, okay? And that's where the problems occur, I think. My experiences that I've had, this is just for me, are mine. They're how I perceive them, how I believe what happened. I'll tell you the story, and if you don't believe me, I can deal with that. That's fine. But I'm not going to be, you know, going on a radio campaign.
Well, yeah, and you're not going to submit it to the Amazing Randy.
No, no,
it's,
well, you know, it's what I see. It's proof for me. You know, I'm not worried about other people. Right.
And for me, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, after doing this for how many years? The better part of a decade. I'm essentially in it for me now. I'm interested in learning this stuff. And experiencing as much as I can to try and formulate some kind of theory, some kind of hopefully eventually provable hypotheses. But proof that the afterlife exists, I've already got it. For me.
For you.
Because I saw
for yourself.
Ghosts. And I almost hit him with my car. You were in the car with me.
Yeah.
And so I saw a ghost. I also saw a shadow figure. I believe those two phenomenons do exist.
Guys, I saw a damn UFO about a month and a half ago. I swear by it.
And
now,
I've never seen a UFO.
So in all essence, it's all about us.
Yeah, and screw everybody else.
The ghost they created was Philip.
No, it's Philip. Yes, it was the Philip experiment.
Philip experiment, yeah. But I think that's what it comes down to. Well, go ahead. So, Kevin, were you going to say something?
Well, yeah, actually I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Then as far as what constitutes proof, I guess the question would be more precisely directed if I said, well, what is it that a given investigator is looking for? Because I've heard investigators say, well, they want to go commune with angels, and I've heard other investigators say, well, they want to go and figure out what the mechanics are, which I'm on the mechanic side, and so is Paul, which, you know, he was, you know, Paranormal Tips came out of that desire to get down to the science. There's a lot of off-topic stuff on there and a lot of talk about the paranormal shows like, you know, Ghost Hunters and such.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and even on the other board that I moderate on, ghostdose.com, it's the same thing. There's a divide in the post group between the people who want to know what's going on and then the people who just want, you know, something spookier. They just want to see that there is something there and they don't really care what it is. They're just going to, you know, see an apparition and say, well, that's Aunt Tilly, you know, and they're satisfied with that. I guess so, as far as that goes, when you're talking about proof, you have your personal truth, your personal proof, like that's good enough for me, and I don't care what the mechanics are behind it because I know what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go and relate that to somebody, it's like, well, what was the temperature? What was the, you know, what was the...
No, yeah, and I understand fully that the few, and I stress the word few experiences that I have had.
Very few.
They could be eaten alive up to scrutiny.
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
If you told anybody at any kind of panel, they'd be like, well, you obviously didn't have everything under control.
All I can say concerning that is that...
And
there
it wasn't.
Yeah, they were things that I just could not, you know, I mean, it's a little off the cuff here concerning ghosts, but this supposed UFO that I saw with two other people that saw the exact same thing, I couldn't explain the damn thing.
I think so essentially, you're saying proof, but I think you're meaning goals.
I think this is a broader scale you guys are talking about.
What kind of goals would you have on any given experiment? Do you want to prove
be to capture a ghost and put it in a box and then be able to torture it until it tells us what
we
want.
You can buy one of those on eBay.
You can buy a ghost
in a jar on eBay. I don't know why.
Many years ago when I was on a different board, somebody put a eBay listing on for a Israeli Dibbuk, D-I-B-B-U-K box. And they said, it's legend, it's haunted, and I just got to get it out of my house. And, you know, and they didn't know what it meant. And, of course, the first thing I did was went to Google and typed in the word, and I got 27,000 explanations as to what it meant. You know, so apparently this person who had the wherewithal to set up an eBay auction did not know how to use Google. So I don't know.
Well, there is.
But I have. I think that what I would like to accomplish from all of this running around, right? From all of these ghost hunters running around, from all of these experiments being done, from all of these books being written, from all of these TV shows being produced. What I think I'd like is I would like to finally figure out just what is going on with this after. What are all these stories? Yeah. Literally, ghost stories have been around since the first person died, I think. And
yeah.
And I just think that these ghost stories, there's got to be some explanation for it. Is it in our heads, like the parapsychologists say? Maybe it is.
Uh-huh.
I think I almost ran over this guy in a cemetery with you in the passenger seat, mm-hmm. and maybe that was in my head. It didn't look like it was in my head, but maybe it is. I don't know.
The problem is that everybody who's investigating is using precisely the same the mythology, the same assumptions, and the same techniques that have always been used. So the answers you're going to get are always going to be the same. We don't know.
That's true.
So if you're going to be walking around the basement with an EMF detector, you're going to be finding EMF fields.
Well, right. When it comes to proof, the fact of the matter is...
And some of them may or may not be anomalous, yeah. but the problem is that it's not true that everybody has always ghost hunted the exact same way. The modern way is doing it this way. There was a previous way where they sat in this... You know, in the dark, and they had all these things laying around on a table, and the ghosts would, you know...
They'd be all over the place.
Trumpet. They'd be
coming
out
of... Oh, like on Most Haunted, you mean?
Yeah, pretty much like on Most Haunted. No, it was the physical mediums, and you know, I mean... And, of course, fortunately, we had Houdini running around debunking them, but the thing is, you've got... people have thought of ways throughout time to ghost hunt in different ways.
Well, nowadays, though... And this is talking about...
It's all led up
still.
To the same thing. We still have no clue what's going on.
But nowadays, though, and this is in regards to proof, because this is what we're talking about. When it comes to the shows and stuff like that, I think a lot of people are under the impression that if it's presented on the show, right? If it's presented on the show,
then it's
proof.
Haunting. Yeah.
Well, you know, Paul is a certified K2 specialist. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Awesome.
He's Paranormal Tips certified K2 specialist. And he has a very impressive badge on his signature line. Paul
awesome.
Has actually written a nice little article about the K2. If you'd like to tell them about that,
please enlighten us, Paul.
The thing that got me on the K2 is when you look at most of the EMF meters is that they're a digital or a swing meter movement. And in both of those situations, there's a dampening of that. It does not respond instantaneously because it takes time for the swing meter, it takes time for the induction to make the meter move, the magnetic field that it produces. And in the LCD, it takes time for it to change numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they brought out the K2, the K2 uses LEDs, and you can turn an LED on and off really fast.
Mm-hmm.
When I was watching Ghost Hunters was the first time that they used it.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, that just doesn't look right. So I had purchased one, and I found out what was hearing on the boards is that if you had the on-off switch down and you let it off and then put it back on, the meter would swing just like it shows on the show. And so I further checked out, and I watched, and the little green LED, the first one, goes out when they do this. Well, if you let the power off, that's the power indicator. So if that light goes off, somebody shut the power off on it by letting off and on.
Hitting the switch makes it spike, essentially. That's what it makes it do.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in later shows, what I've seen them do is after that was put on the sci-fi message board, they went back over and they had some with switches mounted. And a lot of times what they do is they cram a quarter in there and they have it wedge the button down. Well, one thing that they carry around on those shows all the time is those family band radios. And I come line, and I wedge the quarter in just like it, and I hit the key on the family band radio that I have, and it kind of flickered a little bit. And I went, oh, well, yeah, you can kind of get it to spike a little bit because you get a sudden burst of a field, and then it drops off. Because a K2 is not a magnometer. It's made for measuring varying or alternating magnetic fields.
Uh-huh.
So if you hold it to a magnet and just hold it there, it won't show you anything. But if you move the meter around with it on, it'll start registering.
Oh.
It has to be a varying magnetic field. You can't have a steady one. So then I was thinking, well, let's try this. And I held the fan band radio in my hand with a key down, and I just sat there and twisted my wrist back and forth. And the meter started ticking.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And yeah. So one thing that does is it shows you that, one, the scale on the meter is no good. As far as for collecting evidence or anything like that, it's a piece of junk. What it was made for, it was made for the EMF scare back in the 90s. When everybody was afraid, oh, my TV's blowing off too much EMF, I'm going to get cancer.
And
oh, my
microwave oven.
All that
good old days.
and that's what it was made for. And it works fine for that, because, you know, you can go up and you can go, oh, well, that's over 25 milligauss. That's not good. Well, yeah, that's fine. If that's what you're looking for, that's fine. But when you're trying to collect data and trying to see what's going on with the magnetic field, no, it doesn't work. And then also, I can sit in my room with that thing on, and there can be a lightning storm out there. And not every bolt will set it off, but every now and then you see, oh, that one did. It must have hit something and set off a field through the power lines or something like that. But you get random spikes.
So basically what you're saying is we should not, on a dark and spooky, rainy night, which is, that's the portrait of a ghost hunt, right? Using a K2 meter would not be the smartest, it wouldn't be the smartest thing to use in there.
No, because you're going to get random spikes. Well, shoot, even if someone drives down the road with a linear amplifier on their CB and keys up and keys off for a second, it's going to make it spike.
Yeah.
So all sorts of man-made influences can make this thing get these little spikes and stuff.
Mm.
And if somebody's out there, if somebody's in some haunted building or reported a haunted building, and they're sitting there asking questions, and all of a sudden they get a spike coincides with a question, how do you know that spike wasn't just somebody keying up on a CB or some other man-made influence that just coincided with the question?
What we really need is somebody who's actually interested in doing hard science like this. Somebody who's actually willing to go and actually do the data collection, because most of science is mind-numbingly dull.
Yeah,
it's a lot of data collection. It's a lot of observation. It's a lot of note writing. It's a lot of comparing and cross-referencing. And the problem is that quite literally, we as a species know nothing about the paranormal. We have a lot of assumptions. We have a lot of things that look like they could be true, they kind of fit the evidence, but we don't have anything authoritative to tell us what actually is going on, if there's one thing going on, or if there are 1,000 different things going on that we're all sort of lumping into one category. So when somebody says the word ghost, you know, it's like, well, I knew it was my, you know, dead grandpa because it looked just like my dead grandpa.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, you know, simple syllogistic logic. But since it's a field we know nothing about, we don't know. Let's just assume for the sake of argument that he did see his dead grandpa. We don't know that that's a ghost. We don't know that that's a departed soul. Well, what else could it be? Well, I don't know. We don't know. We don't know.
No, yeah, and I think that's what, I mean, you hear that a lot. I mean, even to nowadays, and even in a field where we got plenty of people that are claiming to be experts in this stuff, they attach the title expert to them, and it always perplexes me. I think there's people out there like, you know, Doug and I have mentioned this a lot, that, you know, there's people out there with a lot more experience in this stuff. They've tried a lot of things. So, you know, they could be someone to go to for reference or for some type of consultation, but to attach, you know, I'm an expert in this field, it's absolutely ridiculous, I think, to say that. Because,
well, yeah,
because
there are no experts.
Yeah,
I mean, basically, I could go out and I could buy some EMF detectors and some machines that go bing and call myself an investigator. And I'm not suggesting that there be any kind of regulation, because that would be really stupid. But knowing that there's really no qualification for somebody calling them an expert or writing a book. Or, you know, doing, and I think, and I just realized that maybe I've been making a mistake. I've been derisively calling it the Scooby Gang approach to ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, it seems like the Scooby Gang did a lot better job, because they always debunked. They never actually found a ghost.
Well, yeah, you're right. It was always Farmer Fred with the mask on. It wasn't anything real.
It was the owner of the amusement park.
Yeah, exactly. It was always somebody very, very real and very, very
It was the construction company that wanted to tear down the mill. Yes, always. Well, however, you've got all these people running around with these cameras, with these recording devices. Why can't somebody accidentally take a picture of a ghost? Or
well, they could actually, and that's what the frustrating part is, because I've seen some pictures. You know, I've been known to play around with Photoshop on my off time, but I've seen some photos that are really, really intriguing. The problem is that even if you have an enthusiastic amateur who has no agenda and just like, hey, look, it's a picture of a dead guy, you know, and we can see it, that's great, but that's a one, as Paul said, one data point. And you could say, okay, well, that looks like a ghost, and we could call it a ghost when we pass the picture around at Christmas, but that doesn't do anything as far as answering the why. Okay, well, why is that? If that indeed is a dear departed soul, why is that soul standing there at that moment, and by what facility is allowed to, you know, allows you to see it? I mean, you know, the scientist in my head says, well, if that's a soul, then, and it's on a photo, then light had to have reflected off that surface. It has to be interacting with the real world in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you couldn't take a picture of it. You know, so therefore, if it's interacting in some way, that means that there has to be some you know, agency by which that we're able to interact with it and see it. You know, so no, the people walking around with cameras, that's great. You know, it would be even better if they're walking around with cameras taking notes about, you know, temperature and pressure and anything that they can think of, so that way we can compare that at a later time.
Well, yeah, and I think it all comes down again, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week too, Doug, it's just statistics, straight up statistics. That's how you really get information, I think. And, you know, like you said, Paul, you know, this, if you get one person who legitimately may have seen something or could have photographed something or recorded an EVP or something or whatever maybe, that's just one data point, right? No, but if you were to compile,
yeah. Well, I think statistically, okay. Let's say you have 400,000 ghost stories, right, or 400,000 UFO sightings,
yeah,
right. And a percentage of those, let's say 90%, are fraud,
rubbish,
fraud. Right. I mean, I lied. I didn't really see anything. Whatever. A certain percentage, let's say 9%, are a misunderstanding of what was actually happening.
Just
like
a,
the
yeah,
blue light,
yeah.
You know, the blue, you went to see what time it was, it reflected off of a piece of glass, the other investigator saw that and fit that observation to fit the invented backstory. Okay, there you go. So there you go. The entire rest of it, except for one person... Right?
Right,
except for one person, is the Me Too syndrome. Oh, I saw that too. Right? I saw that too. Okay, and then there's one person who actually saw a ghost or actually saw a UFO. Well, there you go. I mean, there's your proof. However, how do you know which one it is? Of that half of a million. That's the hard part.
Not only that,
well,
how do you prove what they saw? It's their profession. They're the ones who saw it.
Mm.
So if you see something, I don't know what you saw, and I have no way of seeing it.
Right.
So I just have to go on your word that you saw it.
Or you have to investigate until you see it.
If it's a phenomenon that you can go back and witness time and time again, well, yeah, you better get in there and start studying it. But you just found something that will give you valuable data because it's reoccurring, and you can keep trying different ways and different measurements and trying to gather data to try and figure out what makes it tick, how it works, all of that.
Right. I wonder if these shows, these TV shows that are out now and evidently are going to be coming out, they go and they find these haunted locations, right? Oh, this mm-hmm. is... And at the beginning, they weren't so haunted. But now, oh my gosh,
it's a pit to hell now.
All right, so now you've got this haunted location with things flying off the walls and things are hitting us in the head and we're dude running all over the place. Okay, so you've got... what? You've got this proven haunted location.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously you've got it in there because you were in there to make the TV show. Why don't you set up cameras and recorders and things pretty much 24/7 for 6 months? Get all the data you possibly can.
Because the TV
That's
network
exactly
won't pay for
I
that.
Said.
The TV
That's
network
exactly
won't pay
what
for
I
that.
Said.
They won't pay for that.
Well, I know.
And who has the money for that?
Right.
It
really,
all
the
comes
thing is,
down to wanting instant gratification level.
Well, the thing is I mean, if Scott, if you and I ever wanted to recreate my ghost sighting, all we'd have to do is find the death escort.
I'd have to give myself a concussion again. Yeah, that would suck.
You would have to wear a helmet.
Can I be there for it this time?
Well, that wouldn't completely...
I can sort of assume he was wearing a helmet now.
He should be.
He wears the helmet out in public. But no, they make him. But no,
really?
No, we'd have to get in a car. We'd have to drive through Salem Walker Cemetery, right? And I'd say if we conducted that experiment, 1,000 times, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. it may not happen any 1,000 of those
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
However, it might happen once, and you might see it. I don't
That's
know.
True.
I don't know the statistics for how often that guy returns to that cemetery.
That's
to
why
stand
you collect
in the
data,
right?
That's why you collect data, so you know that. It's like, well, on the first of every month under a full moon when the temperature is 60 degrees, you can see the guy over there by the gravestone.
Right, and it would be an interesting experiment, but it would be something that we'd have to do over time.
It would take,
And, of
course,
we don't have that amount of time.
It's something that would take years.
But there's ghost hunters with equipment that they can dedicate to a known haunted site and say, I'm going to set up this. It's going to be a webcam. It's going to capture things. And, it maybe take 4,000 pictures a day. And we'll go through each 4,000 of them once a week. We'll all sit down, have pizza, and we'll go through all 4,000. And if the ghosts keep showing up, then we'll find out what the temperature and the humidity and all the other sensors are.
True, exactly right, and that right there would be a perfectly sound scientific experiment of just observation over time. And if you could go talk, why don't you go talk to the people over at Waverly Hills and have them do that? They've got a big empty haunted building that they're making, a little bit of cash off of now. Maybe they could actually do some webcams on the haunted top level where all the shadow people have their conventions.
No, and that's, again, I think that would be, that would collect, that would be data. My brain's stopping for some reason. Maybe I do need a helmet.
I'm just
maybe the helmet.
I'll buy you a nice one.
What's this with it? Okay, everybody's wanting to buy me a helmet now. This is wonderful. No, and I think it is about data collection. I think it's about statistics. Getting them to do that, I don't know. It'd be interesting to ask.
Well, it's also,
what's that?
It's also about knowing how the equipment works.
That's huge.
Okay, look at the thermal imager. It's being used so much on the paranormal shows now. So the thermal imager cannot see air temperature. Sorry, it's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Thermal imager looks at thermal radiation. Air doesn't radiate thermal, doesn't give off that much radiation. It gets blasted out and drowned out by the solid object from the other side.
Uh-huh.
If you could see air temperature when you turned on the thermal camera, it would just be all one color because you just see the air right in front of the camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That would be it. You wouldn't see anything else. But everybody is sold on it, and you've got a lot of paranormal investigation teams out there that are looking at buying these things, and they're thousands of dollars.
They're very expensive,
and it's like, why are you investing in that? They're good if you want to see, and the way they set them up, it's like, most of the time when you see them on these shows, they have it set in the color mode. Well, if you really want to see what's going on, and from what I've learned talking with people who use these things, you use a grayscale. And then you lock your scale off. You don't let it just free float, because the way that they use these things on the shows is they set it up so that it produces the most anomalies that you can get out of it. So you can't tell what you're looking at.
Okay.
Most of the guys that are out in the field are running around with this mentality, though. A lot of the investigators that are out there, they don't understand how their equipment works, what it measures, how exactly it works. A non-contact surface thermometer is the same way. In fact, a thermal imager is the same thing with just a higher resolution.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still running around out there thinking that I can measure a cold spot.
Well, this has definitely been, and it's something that's been put out there a lot, and I still think a lot of people, they don't know their equipment.
Let's talk about that real quick. I want to know. Okay, cold spot. You mentioned that. For literally years and years, and I can remember this from when I was a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's decades and decades ago. But even before that, people were associating cold spots with ghosts. Why?
Yeah, that is it. Okay.
Does
now,
it prove
you have
it?
An
no.
environment that has static electricity, it can give you the same simulation or sensation. I'm sorry. So how do you know it's really a cold spot? You have to measure the air temperature, because if you go on your own perception, you could be wrong. It may not be cold. It feels cold. You think it's cold.
Yeah.
Or like when they reach up, I've seen them where they reach up and they go, "Oh, there's a cold spot up here." Well, yeah, but you just change the circulation in your arm, and it's going to feel different.
Right. Because the blood will have come down out of your hand.
The blood comes down, your hand gets a little bit colder, you feel a little bit colder.
Right, and you're paying attention.
My opinion is I think that this equipment does have a place, in it, but these are not by any stretch of the imagination ghost detectors. Because as much as I, you know, as much as I am starting to dislike the Ghost Hunter shows, style shows, you know, some of the things they say actually are sort of, you know, called out of pop science, like EMF fields causing feelings of dread or, you know, skin rashes and things like that, which, you know, that's not just an idle claim. That's something that somebody's actually observed, whether it's, you know, but there is a place to, you know, for EMF detectors. Yeah, you got a high EMF reader. You need to have an electrician come out and take a look at this. But as far as its usefulness for finding ghosts, I mean, yeah, you can use it as sort of a, you know, as sort of a, I don't know, a way to measure the environment around you. But you can't really use the stuff to find ghosts. Like, yeah, there's a ghost right there because, you know, it's cold.
Well, what it comes down to, unfortunately, and this is just a little side thing into that, because I've seen this in action. I've seen people do this before. I've been on investigations where people have read high EMF meetings in a location, in an area, and two very good friends of ours that are friends of the show, that are part of a group, literally in front of everybody went and said, one of these guys, ironically enough, is an electrician by trade, okay? And he literally went over and looked around, went up, and he literally was able to pinpoint a fluorescent light source that had the actual cable. The wiring was totally it was, how do you say
it?
There was no covering, there was no shielding on it whatsoever.
It wasn't grounded.
And it was right in the area. He literally, he took left an article on the floor and went below there, went up into the ceiling, the push-out tile things, right? Sure. Went up into that and was able to, right there, it was right there exactly. And doing all of that, guys, these two people did this. They went through all this and said, look, this is not a ghost. This is just unshielded wiring down here. I'll show you. Here's my union card. I'm an electrician. I do all this stuff. And they still did not believe that. They said, no, it's a ghost. You're wrong. It's a ghost. So really what it comes down to, I think, though, is you can probably do, you know, we could talk about this stuff that we're blue in the face. And I'm not saying that it's a futile act either, though. I think it's very important. I think this is a great conversation we're having. But some people, I think, once they have that suggestibility, once they have that in their mind that that's a ghost in front of me, or that cold spot I felt, or that scratchy EVP that I got is a ghost, there is nothing you're going to be able to do to tell them any differently. You're not going to be able to change
them. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I've seen it.
There's one thing that you could do. The one thing that somebody could do in the limited circumstances, if they could reproduce whatever it is that they saw or heard on command.
Yeah.
If there's like a flashing of the lights, for instance, at inopportune moments, and it's like, well, that's the ghost because it was listening to us. But if you could go over and, you know, step on that floorboard that breaks the connection and makes them flicker again, then it's like, really? Yeah. Really? The ghost is in my shoe? This is what you're telling me?
The ghost is, it's manifested in my shoe and it's making me flicker the lights. Yeah. Oh, my God.
What about,
we could go through this. I mean, I've observed that, though.
Yes. What about Spiricom?
Ooh.
What about Farrakhan?
Spiracon. Yeah. Louis Farrakhan. All about Louis Farrakhan.
Like, wow, that's a left
turn. He obviously is haunted. No. No, but...
yeah, we only got a couple minutes here. That's actually a good question.
Spiracon.
What I find interesting about Spiracon is that the first iteration of that unit, I was looking at it, and it's sitting at about 728 megahertz. Mm-hmm. That's the same band as a CB.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And what they do is they take and they run a transmitter, and they have this transmitter, and it runs across over into a receiver, and it comes down, and they run it through some filter. I don't remember the schematic exactly, but I was looking at it, and I was going, how can you use that? It's just like a regular EVP. How can you say that something is an EVP and not a radio transmission? Because I can show you and prove to you that radio signals can bounce all over the place, and that something that's not made to receive a radio signal can actually receive it and demodulate it, and you can hear a voice out of it.
Right.
It's a hint if your EVP says things like, there's a smoky bear alert on Highway 5.
Right, but I don't remember.
Some of them can get real obvious. If you look at like some of these shows, they've had one on there where it sounded like this lady having a conversation with somebody on like a wireless phone, but it kind of fit their conversation and questions, so they automatically went, that's the voice of a dead person. Well, how can you do that? Unless you shield whatever you're recording with, because unless you can eliminate all the other possibilities, you can never truly say that this is this. Uh-huh. You have to say, well, it could be the voice of a dead person, but it could also be a radio signal, because of all the millions of transmissions that occur every second, every day, and how they can bounce off the ionosphere and travel around the world. I've listened to guys halfway around the world before.
Yeah.
On a CD, I've listened to them from Georgia, and I'm in Washington State.
My God.
And so how can you eliminate it? You can't. And the environment changes. How do you know that you heard that voice for just a second because the truck was going down the highway, big metal box, reflected the signal just at the right time to where they picked it up? You can't, because it's, there's too many of them out there. So unless you shield against it, EVPs are pretty much worthless.
Well,
or if you start designing really tight science experiments that involve controls and that involve actual data collection, you know, because again, you can do all the investigations that are exactly like all the ones that have occurred in history, and you will get exactly the same result, which is no
yep.
result at all.
If you want to keep getting what you're getting, keep doing what you're doing. And
yeah,
I have some good news and bad news. The good news is the period of what it's been several years now, there's been a very, very low level activity of sunspots. And the bad news is, unfortunately, it's picking up, which means
we're in the Maunder minimum, is what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which
yeah.
means that from now on, our ghost could be from all the way around the world rather than around the country, because
or they could be from Mars.
They could be. That would be
spooky. They could be Martian ghosts.
We have to sign off.
Yeah.
Speaking of this kind of stuff, we've got to sign off because
guys,
the
hang
end up, of,
yeah. don't leave end us. Just hang on the line for 1 second, okay?
All right.
Okay.
That was, of course, Kevin Knight.
Wow.
We
went right
Paul
to the break
Sherman.
On that, too.
We did. We blew right to the break.
Right
we had
through
a break.
It. Oh, my God.
Of paranormal-tips.com. Paranormal-tips.com.
And man.
Which, of course, will be linked up at ghostlytalk.com.
And this is what I want to hear more of, is some real critical thought on these things. Not just the TV shows, but anything out there, right? I mean, it's great. I mean, like we talked about earlier in this discussion, Kevin asked a very good question. What constitutes your, what's your idea of proof then, Scott and Doug? Well, I have my ideas of proof, but at the same time, I'm not taking them out to the Inquirer, like I said, and trying to claim that they're the real, oh my God, conclusive
well, that's
proof
your,
that go.
That's your problem. Right. You're not taking it out to the
I guess
Inquirer.
I'm just not being
you haven't
media savvy
set your
enough.
Sights high enough. And you've got to go to the cable station.
You need a helmet.
And I need a helmet. I need a silver, yeah. an aluminum helmet so they can't read my
I'll
mind.
I'll take a lightning bolt on it for you.
Kevin wants a lightning bolt on the helmet. We
thank
heard
you.
That during the break. Right. Or during the discussion. We need to thank Kevin Knight and Paul Sherman of Paranormal.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. We have
thank
to thank
you for having
excellent.
Having
we have to thank Victoria Kelly
yeah.
of VenusRising.com and I don't remember the other one, but it'll be linked up on the website, the
oh
other
God.
Website. And wow, Eugene and Mary Yelchin doing great work, tools for kids
yeah.
and their parents.
Quite a show tonight. I'm pretty tired here.
Haunting stuff. HarperCollinsChildrens.com.
Yeah.
Wow.
Worn out.
What a show.
Yeah, really good time.
We'll be back next week with more fun and excitement. And of course, we'll have
tigers and bears. Oh my.
And we will have a helmet on Scott L. That's a big promise for you. This has been Doug.
This has been Kyle.
I'm still Bonnie, God, and I'm getting him a pretty pink helmet.
And this has been Ghostly Talk. We'll see you next week.
Ghostly Talk!
You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.